there, gang. Right, George, you're out there. That's a big thing here this weekend yet.
Hey, for the right car buy and for the right service, you got to see your New York, New Jersey, and Fairfield County Plymouth dealer. Yeah, they're coming through with the small economy car that's making it big this year, the Plymouth Duster. Duster is small enough to handle, park, and go easy on the gas, too. And it's large enough for the room, power, and safety you need for today's driving. So no wonder Duster is America's hot-selling compact. Last year, for example, Plymouth sales were at an all-time record for New York, New Jersey, and Fairfield County Plymouth dealers. And this year, faced by Duster, they're up a huge 26%. So why don't you go with a winner, Dad, with a car that's a proven leader in resale value. Plymouth Duster. You get a lot more car for your money. See your New York, New Jersey, and Fairfield County Plymouth dealer now.
We have a query here from one of our listeners, and I don't know whether any of you out there can answer it. Whatever happened to, he said he'd like to know for a, hello, wait a minute, we got a hum here, just a minute, I'll check this thing out. Bad hum here, just a minute, there, we got it. He said, dear Shepherd, says for a major philosophical, sociological treatise I'm writing, could you please tell me whatever happened to the little old winemaker? You remember the little old winemaker? That lascivious old son of a gun used to hang around down in the wine cellar and pinch all them chicks. Well, I don't know what happened to him. Any of you out there know? You may be able to help one of our more philosophical listener types. Here's another one. Another victim writes. He said, dear Mr. Shepherd, whatever became of that chick whom everyone used to watch as she walked along Wall Street? Remember the chick with the large superstructure, do you recall? A very well-developed mammary system. And everybody used to watch her. I don't know. Whatever did become of her? I guess she retired undefeated. And, you know, you might as well retire when you're at the top. I mean, after all, it's downhill from that point on. But nevertheless, I don't know whatever happened to her. He also makes this point. He says her grandchildren will never believe that one. Imagine her 50 years from now trying to tell her grandchildren everybody at Wall Street watched her when she walked by like a giant ship under full steam. Hi, baby. Would you please give me a salute to American phenomena over there? A little American music, Herbert, please.
Hooray, hooray, hooray. Hooray, hooray for Saturday night. There ain't nothing in the world like it. Quack, 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 quack. There is going to be plenty of trouble tonight. Oh, tonight we know that a lot of guys are going to make unbelievable mistakes. They're going to twist them all over.
We have a note here that says, I've just spotted some graffiti. It says, God is not dead, he's just senile. I didn't invent it. More graffiti sent in by one of our listeners. It says, legalize apathy among consenting adults. Another suggestion for those of you out there that have been wondering what's been happening to your life. I suppose you saw the ad. It says, can you, Mr. Waterbed Owner, be rendered sterile for your heated, by your heated water mattress? Yes, there is evidence now that it's rendering people sterile. For an informative and honest brief report by three human behavior research consultants, send your name and address to et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe it's your waterbed that's doing it to your friend. Thank you, Herbert. I got to reset that. We're going to need that. You know, I bet people 50 years from now are going to have a hell of a lot of trouble trying to explain water beds to the people of that time. Did you hear about the water bed out in, I believe it was someplace in Ohio, Columbus or someplace like that? The guy got this water bed. Did you hear about that? It was in the news here recently. He got a water bed. Well, you know what they are. You know what waterbeds are, aren't you? Yeah, you know. Well, he got a waterbed, see? So it was one of these, it was a big one, apparently, a double waterbed or something. So he got it, and for about 26 hours, he pumped water into it. And he finally got the thing where it was almost filled. And all of a sudden, there was a loud creaking sound, and the waterbed bust through three floors. He lived on the third floor, went all the way to the basement. Ta-da-da-da-da, cost $17,246,000 worth of damages, not including taxes. That's state and local taxes. Did you hear the new rock group? Dutch Elm and the Blight. Yeah, it's a European group. Hey, we have a little problem here. Several questions have come up, and tonight we're going to answer a few of the questions that have come up. One of them is, what about the TV show? You've been seeing it, haven't you, Herbert? You haven't? What kind of a friend are you, for crying out? Oh, he works. I see. I see. You got other and less exalted things to do at that hour, right? Well, for those of you, and I don't have time or the staff to answer questions by mail, but there's been a lot of letters recently asking about it. The TV show will be renewed and is renewed and will continue next year. We have other and more glorious topics to deal with next year. Oh, yeah, we've got a beautiful one. Yeah, well, great one where we're already working on. What's that? You want to know what it's about? Pornography, the art of our time. With selected film clips. And various... Pornography in action. Or pornography in you. Are you missing out on life? Listen, we got... So does that answer your question? The show will continue next year. And from what I understand, all around the country, the show has gotten, we're very delighted, it's gotten very excellent response around the country from, you know, all around. In fact, a lot of people, I guess, in this area don't realize that that is a network show. And they tend to think, you know, it's on Channel 13 and that's it. But actually, the show is on some 200 and some odd stations, 220, something like that. And I was talking to the network the other day, and they said that that there is a good possibility that if you missed any of the shows, they're planning to repeat them this summer. They will be showing the shows, apparently, this summer, so that, you know, if you... It's just like what they call... It's not really... I guess you couldn't call those shows summer reruns, really. Not like a regular series. But that's the story on the show. I hope it answers a few questions. Incidentally, another thing, too, in answer to a lot of questions, the show is not a show where I'm hired to do this. You know, people keep saying, why don't you give those guys that are in charge of your show an idea? But I come up with the ideas on the show. It's my show. And it's been very gratifying. It's, in fact, been probably the most gratifying experience professionally that I've had so far in my professional career. I enjoy doing it. If you haven't seen the show and you're wondering what we're talking about, wherever you may be listening, it is broadcast Sunday at 8 on the PBS network. That's the Public Broadcasting Service Network. And locally, that is locally here in New York, it's Channel 13. Now, it may be some other channel in your area, wherever you might be. But one of the great advantages, as you've probably been aware of for some time, about PBS is, one, the absence of commercials, which I find very refreshing, but that's not in itself a positive virtue, I don't find, because in many cases I think a lot of the commercials are better than many of the shows that they appear on commercial TV. But I will say that one of the great advantages of public broadcasting television is the experimental nature of it.
that you can really do a lot of very interesting philosophical and technical experimenting. And that's something that we've gotten a lot of questions and letters on about the photography on the show and the editing and all that. Well, that's all done. We do that all together, so it's not a photographer that's responsible for it. We tell them what shots we want. They just do it. But the technical innovations on the show, I suspect, have pretty much escaped most people who watch it, unless they're in the business. It has not escaped them. That there are a lot of technical innovations on the show that are very interesting. And to answer a few questions, for one thing, the show is not filmed. A lot of people have written and asked me, why is the color so startlingly good? Well, for one thing, we've been very, very careful about that. This is probably the most color-conscious show on television today. And incidentally, it's gotten a great deal of technical approval all around the country from people in the technical field about the technical elegance of the show. And I'm not trying to be egotistical or anything about it, but very early, 2 years ago, when we first started to work on the series, it takes that long to do a thing like this. About 2 years ago, we made that decision that above almost anything else, what we wanted the show to do was to have a distinctive visual look, really distinctive visual. And that meant color, because I think in 1971, if you don't have color, you're just way behind the times. It's simply that. That's a fact. Color is a very important part of your world when you walk around in life, unless you're colorblind, in which case you have my sympathy. But no, truly, I've always felt sorry for colorblind people. But in your life, if you're not colorblind, you know, even instinctually, that color is extremely important to you. And if you were to remove that from a product or an experience, if you were to remove all color from an experience, well, that experience is diminished by that much. In fact, in many cases, it's almost destroyed. And I've always felt that color is probably 70% of the visual experience. Just like I'd say 70% of the eating experience is taste. Now, if you couldn't taste what you were eating, it would be nothing. You wouldn't. There'd be no such thing as the gourmet cuisine. Everybody would sit down for 5 minutes a day and knock down X numbers of calories of rice or whatever it is, tasteless stuff, and just go their way. Would be nothing at all to it. And that would be true of painting. Has it occurred to you that if you were to remove the concept of color from art, painting, visual art, it just wouldn't exist. There would be no museums. No point. That is not to say that there aren't great black and white things and shades, but that's very limited. As anyone can tell you in the art gallery field, the market for black and white drawings is almost non-existent. And I could say this as a line drawer myself, that almost all illustrations today in major magazines are color. So what I'm saying here is that we spent a great deal of time and effort on the color on the show. Much more than, in fact, I'd say, without qualification, more than any show on the air today. Because we invested a tremendous amount of money in color, in new equipment, the kind of equipment that no other network is using yet today. And so, in answer to a lot of questions, this is not color film. It is tape, but a very special type of tape and a very special type of camera and color equipment. It's not just ordinary color equipment. And even the editing techniques have been unique. There have been a lot of innovations, technical and otherwise, on the editing. So I'm just saying these things in case anybody wants to, you know, answer to a lot of questions. And answer to other question, one other important question, I decide what the show will be about. So don't, if you don't like a show, don't say, oh boy, did they tell you to do a bad thing last week. It's my fault. I stand behind it. I simply say that when you're dealing with a very, very personal show, which is what this show is, you'll find that Some people will have a great affinity for one show and none at all for the next because it's personal. So you'll find that one group of people will flip over a boat, over a show that we did with using a boat because they happen to have a particular personal feeling for boats. On the other hand, they may not have the same feeling, say, for a show that we do about beer. By the way, that's going to be a great show when it shows up. Watch for that one. That's one of my favorites. In fact, this week's show is also one of my favorites. Three or four of us on this little crew that we had, our staff, have picked our own favorite shows. And I think this one that's coming up is one of my favorites, personally. It's a curious show. But anyway, I'm not going to talk any more about TV except to say that it will continue, and we've got big plans for next year. Answered your question? You know, speaking of it's hard to capture our time. It really is. You can't really pinpoint anything specifically, and say this is America in 1971 because it's not so. One part of the country. It's interesting. Now you take how even pronunciations will vary across the country. Now, I got a call from a guy the other day who I respect very much. He says, hey, you made a very bad mistake the other day on your show. And I said, what? He says, well, you know that fish that you were talking about on your show? You did a show about Maine? I said, yes. He said, well, that fish is not called crappie. It's called crappie. I said, friend, that shows that you're from the Effete East. That in the Effete East, it is called crappie. Because then, there's a certain basic Puritanism that runs through the East that goes all the way back to Cotton Mather. But in the Midwest, that fish is called a crappie, which is a little more accurate in its description. However, so when you're doing a network... Oh, and there's another thing, too. People will continually write me and say, oh, I love the show, but why did you tell that story on your television show that I heard? Well, now, I have to make a point about that you must understand that my radio show is purely, almost exclusively, a fairly local product. It's heard on several stations around the country, but in general, that you people in New York, in this area, are a minority in the country. In other words, somebody in Queens who's heard me tell a story on my radio show believes that I shouldn't tell it now that I'm on a national network show. Well, now, that's just like if you were in a nightclub and you heard Bill Cosby tell a story. And then you got bugged because he went on national television and told the same story. The fact is that material must be given a wider audience. And so many New Yorkers tend to feel, though, that New York is where it's at, and the rest of the country is just sort of attached to it loosely, and only by the grace of Abby Hoffman. However... the facts of the matter are that New York is a very small part of the world, in spite of the fact that when you live in it, and I know because I live here, you tend to ultimately begin to feel that this is the world, you know, this is it. In fact, many exciting things are going on outside of the New York area. For example, Portland, Oregon. I don't want to bring that up, but it's bad news. Like Thousand Oaks, California, for example. Do you know that the university, one of the big universities out there, has organized the first gigantic kazoo band? And they've done away with their regular marching band. The marching band they have in the middle of the halftime of their various events, and they have a giant marching kazoo band. And it's a highly trained kazoo band. And I say to you that this is not a New York development and that we've got to keep watching that because ultimately Princeton will discover it and then it'll be official. New York Times will do a piece and Life magazine will do a 4-page article in color and how it's fine to become official. But, you can't fight City Hall. You just can't. How many of you, for example, fighting City Hall, a lot of you people know that Shepherd stands practically alone in the world today, and being a true cockroach fan. I happen to like cockroaches, and the reason I like cockroaches is because they remind me of so many people I know, and there are other reasons, too, but to me, the cockroach is a gutty animal. He's a,
He's gutty. He's uncomplaining. One thing about a cockroach, you never heard one complain. And this to me is very significant because, you know, for a long time, I remember one of the most important lessons I remember from the few times that I went to Sunday school when I was a kid. They kept talking about the meek shall inherit the earth. And at first, I thought it was my Aunt Clara. When they kept talking about it, because Aunt Clara was a remarkably meek lady. And it turns out, you know, when I thought about it, it wasn't meek at all. It was just that was her game she played. By playing meek, people did things for her. And I realized that, along with George Ade, he says, don't feel sorry for the martyr. They love the job. That's true. George Ade made that point. So anybody that you know that who's a public martyr, you know, who goes around talking about how they're oppressed and all that, they're loving it. After all, how else would you get on the Dick Cavett show? you know, so don't really feel sorry for martyrs. They got a good deal. After all, Joan of Arc would have been nothing. I mean, had she not become a martyr, she'd have been just this little fat girl that worked around in the backyard of a farm there in France. And they don't get very high. But as it is now, she's pretty big. In the firmament. So, but martyrs are all right. Now what's the connection of this with a cockroach? Well, I'll tell you. Cockroaches don't accept martyrdom easily. Mankind does. In other words, the cockroach never regrets. He never looks back over his shoulder and dreams of what might have been. He just plugs ahead and fills his little gut and goes on and cockroaches. That's all he does. Produces more cockroaches. He never worries about the population explosions either. And he just goes on. Well, I suspect now, at this point in my life, I think that the meek are really cockroaches. In addition to that, I'm beginning to believe that there's another creature that's going to fight it out with the cockroach in the end for the title of He Who Shall Inherit, etc. I'd say it's the raccoon. Yes, I would. I, as an old raccoon fan from way back, I've had my experience with. Have you ever had any experience with raccoons? I'll tell you, they make a wild pet. If you don't know anybody that's got a raccoon, you should find out because the raccoon makes a fantastic pet, and he's remarkably agile and totally destructive. Which reminds me, this is WOR New York, and. We fit both them bills, if I may use a little Jersey talk here. Yeah. Hey, if you're looking for a lot of car value, you better listen to this. Your Plymouth dealers of New York, New Jersey, and Fairfield County are coming through with specially equipped Fury V8s and Plymouth Scamps with the automatic transmission at absolutely no extra charge. Specially equipped on a Fury V8 means equipment that you probably order anyway, like power steering, power disc brakes, air conditioning, AM radio, vinyl roof, white sidewalls, and other specified items. Now, on the Scamp, it means a vinyl roof, white sidewalls, deluxe wheel covers, and other popular options. An automatic transmission at no extra charge. That's value. And that's why Plymouth sales for your New York, New Jersey, and Fairfield County Plymouth dealers are up 26% over last year. And last year was a record high. So see your Plymouth dealer now. Yeah, that man will come through for you. However, I'm a great raccoon fan, and I collect Raccooniana. Now, a lot of people, you know, collect, you know, stories of the Civil War. I collect Raccooniana. Wherever the raccoon pops up in the news, I collect it because I want to be on the winning side. I think that ultimately the raccoon may do it. Did you hear what the... Here's a little note from Livingston, New Jersey, a raccoon that gave him hell here recently. Did you hear about him? All right, I'll read it to you. Livingston patrolman Harry Blocker was bitten by a raccoon in a bizarre series of events on Beaufort Avenue on Saturday afternoon here a couple of weeks ago. The patrolman was dispatched to the home of Mrs. Helen Herm on Beaufort Avenue when she reported that water was leaking to the ceiling. Mrs. Herm, who rents a room to some guy upstairs, was unable to get into the locked room to find a cause of the flooding. Apparently, her roomer had locked the room, and that was the end of it. And the water's dripping down through the furnace. You know, it's coming down through the... all down through the walls and all that. Well, Patrolman Blocker gained access to the room. he found water on the floor. And it was about a foot and a half deep. It was coming from an overflowing toilet. He shut off the water supply to the toilet, but then realized that the shower was also running. In addition to all the faucets in the place. However, in the shower was a raccoon. Which had evidently learned how to operate all the doorknobs and the water faucets. And this raccoon also stuffed the toilet with brushes, powder, and other handy items, which are available, which then caused the toilet to back up, and even the lady plumber couldn't have done much about it, because this raccoon was very good at what it was doing. Well, cornered, the patrolman said, "Here, get out of there. Hey, you, raccoon, cut it out." Well, with that, the raccoon bit Blocker as he tried to escape from the bathtub. Not the patrolman, but the raccoon. The policeman, bitten on the left leg, was treated by the patrolman there, by the physician. The raccoon is one of a family that was found in the siren shelter on top of the main firehouse on South Livingston Avenue. They were living up in the air raid shelter there, you know. You've seen these sirens around out there. Well, the animals have been given away to interested residents after they were removed from the firehouse. And this boarder apparently had taken one in. And this was a pretty sharp raccoon. He learned how to roar. Well, did I ever tell you about my experience with the raccoon and the worms? Did I hear about that? Well, this I got to love raccoons dearly. One summer, I was up in Maine. And I was fishing up there, see? And the fishing in Maine can be very exciting. First of all, it's very rocky country up there. And the lakes have rock bottoms to them. And that's, you know, you've seen the rocky coast of Maine and all. Well, it was one of those summers where the fish were not hitting artificial baits at all. Nothing. And I tried everything. I tried bucktail streamers. I tried the double whirligig, the Hawaiian wiggler. I tried the double-jointed pikey minnow. I tried the Bassarino, the one with the transistorized operated motor in it. I tried the little radar crawdad. I tried them all, see? And, yeah, oh, listen, I've got a box full of these little things, and they're all great. I mean, they haven't caught anything, but they're great. They you got little propellers all over them, you know, little lights that light off and on. I love to play with them once in a while. And so I tried everything, see, the whole week. Well, I go into the local fish store there where they have all the baits and stuff, all these, where you go and buy new things. Are you aware, this may surprise you, that the number one sporting business today, in other words, the most money that's spent on sports in America today is for fishing equipment. Now, that would surprise a lot of people who would tend to believe it's, you know, something like boats or water skiing or golf or stuff like that. It is fishing equipment. And I'll tell you, it's because of the nature of the angler. And it's also because of the nature of fishing. Now, if you buy a set of water skis, that's it. I mean, you don't every 5 minutes run back to the water ski store and buy yourself another pair of water skis because you're not water skiing well. Not at all. But fishing is a subtle thing. Most guys feel that if they hit the ultimate lure is the answer. And it keeps luring them on. The lure itself does not lure as many fish as it lures anglers. And so the angler keeps feeling that one day he's going to discover the fantastic, ultimate, dynamic blasteroony that's really going to get him. So what does this lead to? It leads to a madness. It's worse than heroin. I've known guys who've gotten off heroin and cocaine, but who could not flip off the fishing bait problem. That every fisherman who goes into a fishing store or any kind of a sporting goods store, within 5 minutes, he's looking at this new beauty. And it usually comes in a great package. And it's got a set of instructions with it that say something like this. The dynamic little wiggler Dynamo Hawaiian Ding Dong, a blasteroony bait for bass, pike, minnows, whales. It deals with psychopants. It deals with eels. Any known fish. This bait will probably be illegal by next season due to its unbelievable deadly characteristics. Why, in the middle of the living room floor, this bait has been known to attract 7.5-pound lunkers who have walked 6 miles on hard, cold ground just a strike at this new fantastic magic patented bait. Well, what does this do to the, fisherman? Who, by the way, the bait was designed to lure. The bait was not designed to lure fish at any point. Well, you must realize this is an old technique that I'm sorry that I'm getting off on this subject. I'm probably boring you, madam, but then you bore me, too, so what the hell, you know, it's six of one, half dozen the other. But I will say this, that toys now, for example, you go to a toy shop, you go to FAO Schwartz, I would say a good 90% of the toys there are not designed to make kids flip. They're designed to make adults flip. Because after all, who's going to shell out to buy this thing? That's right, Uncle Fred. And any toy that says, a toy that gives constructive entertainment and at the same time instills the child with educational precepts, forget it. The kid's going to hate it. 5 minutes later, he's thrown it down the air chute and it's blocking up the furnace. Because any toy that is designed to give the child a moral base to his playing, to teach him right and wrong, and to make sure that he grows up without the curse of racial bias, this new toy called Total Integration. Well, oh, man. I mean, a kid couldn't... Yeah, I wonder how many kids have flipped when they got these bad games, you know, called Integration. The game that's designed to teach the child that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 is the most constructive act of all time. A question and answer game with Little Spinner. Go. You have just made a bad remark to a Puerto Rican. Go back three spaces. You know, that... Well, it's this kind of stuff that well-meaning yet fuzzy-headed parents are continually buying for their kids. Therefore, boring the kids out of their skull and creating the generation gap. So, nevertheless, I would say that most toys, and Lyle, I think you'll agree with me here, most toys are designed by toy designers for other adults to buy, not for kids to play with. That's right, you're one of them. So, in the end, the basement is filled with these monstrosities. And the kid is still messing around playing with spools, which he found, and bottle caps and stuff like that. That's what he wants, you know. But he's got all this junk. Well, now, what I'm saying here is this is an old principle. In other words, the principle is to design your product for the buyer and not for its ostensible point or aim. As long as you can attract the buyer, you've done exactly what the bait company wants. I mean, the bait company is not in the business of catching fish. It's in the business of catching you. So, what does this do to the angler? Well, the angler winds up with five giant fishing tackle boxes full of bad mistakes. Now, out of his fishing tackle box, he probably actually uses three lures that he actually caught a fish on. And these lures are usually very simple, like a spoon. A very simple thing like that, or a hook upon which you attach a worm. So, nevertheless, you know, so here I am. Now, you want to hear about the raccoon. Well, this is what happened. See, Shepard has driven up the wall. Nothing is working, and he could see fish. Oh, everywhere I look, fish, big fish are jumping out of the water and looking at me and waving. They'd swim next to my boat and make rotten remarks and that kind of stuff. So I knew that something had to be done. So I go into the fish store, see, and I said to the guy, and he's got all his $20 million worth of equipment, all of, you know, all kinds of great-looking baits and lures. He even had one with a tiny outboard motor on it, Herb. See, a little outboard, one of these little gas-driven motors, you see, so that you don't even have to cast it. You just start this little thing, blah, off it goes, see, and it looks like some kind of a demented perch, which, of course, every fish wants to eat. And you just sit back there and reel them in, see? So I'm in there talking to this guy, and he's got a tired look around the eyes. So I walk in, I says, now look, Charlie. His name is Charlie, believe it or not. I walk in Charlie's bait store. So I go in there, I said, Charlie, listen, I've been here 3 days now, and I have lashed the lake to a veritable froth. I mean, I have thrown in more lures. As a matter of fact, My lures have gone into the lake in school formation. I've used every conceivable kind of lure. I threw doorknobs in there, everything. I said, now, come on, what are they hitting? Well, he looked at me. He's a Maine type, see? Now, the Maine type talks a little like this. And he talks very deliberate. Looks at you and says, well, I believe Bar Harbor is an interesting town. And there's a long, pregnant pause. It is always assumed that Maine types are wise. Actually, those long, pregnant pauses denote a very laborious thought process, which is barely getting to anything. But, in fact, there have been several presidential candidates come out of Maine who have been able to successfully parlay that long, pregnant pause into the myth of wisdom. And also, it's the flat voice. So he said to me, well, I'll tell you, I've known you for a long time. I said, yes, Charlie, you have. Wouldn't want to lead you astray. I said, that's good, Charlie. You've led me astray many a season. I've got maybe 400 pounds of little bippies that I bought from you. I mean, there's one, in fact, that attacked me. And I'm so, you know, I'm damn sick and tired of it, Charlie. What are they hitting? Long, pregnant pause, and he said, worms. I say worms. But Charlie, worms. Why, the merest kid fishes with worms. Sorry, they're hitting worms. Well, there was only one thing to do. Get worms. So, since Charlie didn't sell worms, he only sold those motor-driven monsters, I went back to the camp, and I got a hold of a shovel, and I started to dig worms. Well, now, the one fact of Maine life you must understand is that Maine is composed really, what Maine really is a large pile of heavy, round, enormous rocks upon which has been very lightly sprinkled a dusting of soil. This is what Maine is, which gives you certain problems when you dig. I have known of guys who have dug for 4 and 5 days and had a 3 or 4 inch hole in the ground. Because, boy, I'll tell you, digging on the ground in Maine is like, yeah, that's blasting your way through. So I go out to the woods there and I start digging. And I dig and I push rocks around. And for 2 whole days, I'm digging away. And I finally had accrued a sum total of maybe 15 to 20 worms. Now, that's nothing for all that digging. But I figured I was well off. You know, I was well off considering what problems other guys were going through getting worms. So I had my worms, right? Well, that night, when I finished digging my worms, I go back, and I'm in this cabin, see? And so I go into the cabin, and I sit down, and I've cooked myself up some hot dogs, which made me very angry, see, because I'd planned that whole week to live on nothing but the great fish I'm going to catch, see? So I got hot dogs, and I got a can of B&M Maine beans. So I'm eating the hot dogs and the beans. I'm drinking some beer, and I'm all set to go out fishing. I was going to go out that night, you know, just as it's getting twilight, I was going to go out and really hit them, see? So I knocked out the beans and the hot dogs. And I finally say, okay, I'm all ready to go. I get my rods and everything. I go out on the porch. No worms. Which I had left on the porch. I left my can of worms out on the porch. The worms are gone. So I said, worms? Who stole my worms? Well, after you've been digging for 2 days, you get very emotional. Now, not many people can get emotional about worms being stolen, right, Tony? Well, let me tell you, a fisherman who's been digging worms for 2 days and who is planning to go out in 20 minutes gets very emotional when he sees the bass jumping out there in the water and his worms have disappeared. Well, I'll tell you, I have rarely been as mad. Really got bugged. So there was only one thing to do. I didn't have any worms now, and there was no way to go. I wasn't going to go out and dig any more worms, millions of mosquitoes. So I get in my boat, and I go out, and I still, all I've got is my 17 tackle boxes, full of insane lures, which I bought, none of which have ever worked. There was one called the Star Spangled Banner River Rod, which was great. This one played on chimes as it went through the water, played on chimes a selection of various old American folk melodies, which were designed to lure the bass into striking, even during the nesting season. Well, I go out, and, you know, again, I'm out there plunking away there. I have one. I have all kinds of great lures. All kinds of lures. For example, I have one lure that is shaped like a $10 bill. Now, anybody who knows that anytime you drop anything valuable in the water, it disappears instantly. Drop a bottle cap in the water, it'll be there for years. Drop a can of Ballantine on the bottom, it never disappears. So I've got one that's shaped like a $10 bill, but nothing ever hits it, though, you know. So I'm out there banging away. I've got rubber frogs, rubber doorknobs. I've got rubber ping pong balls. I'm throwing them all. These little things with fins, with flapping eyeballs and everything. Nothing. So the next day, I go back to digging worms. I got to get some worms. So I dig worms, dig worms, dig worms. I dig maybe 3, 4, 5 hours, and I finally get myself a half dozen worms. So I put them out on the porch again. This was insane for me to do that. I put them out on the porch, go into the house, open myself up a can of beer. I said, I'm going to go out again. And I hear a scrabbling sound out there on the porch instantly. So I rush out with a can of beer in my hand, and there, sitting right in the middle of the porch with my Prince Albert tobacco can in his hand, the one I was using to keep the worms in, is this. Oh, I almost said it on the air. There's a word that is one of these composite words. It's smart blank raccoon. The last word is three letters, has two S's in it. He was sitting there with this can of worms. You know, they sit up on their back legs. So he's sitting up on his back legs with a can of worms in his trap. You know, he's got them like that, see? And one worm is sticking out of his mouth. He has got my worm. Well, he's sitting there in the middle of the back porch, and I holler, I says, my worms, you rotten little... And I make a jump at him, say, well, you know, I must tell you about raccoons. In addition to being unbelievably sneaky, they also have a sense of humor. They really do. They're not... Why, look, this raccoon I just read to you about, what did he do? Stopped up the John, flushed it. Now, that takes a pretty sophisticated thinking. Then he turns on the water in the shower, turns on the water in the sink, and locks the door. He knew what he was doing. All right. So this raccoon, what do you think he did? You think he ran, looked scared, looked like an animal? No. He threw the can at me. He just threw the can at me. Empty, I might point out. The last worm was sticking out of his trap like a chunk of El Pesto spaghetti, and he darted under the porch. Well, there we were. It was a standoff. That he was hitting my worms. Now I knew what to do. See, I said, well, I know what to do. I know what to do. I won't leave them on the porch. So I go back out in the woods, dig more worms, get all set for the next day's fishing, put the worms in the kitchen, and the next morning day is gone. It was that week that I formed a grudging admiration and a deep respect for raccoons. And I also realized another thing about a raccoon that week. That a raccoon... Oh, you know what he did, too? Do you want to hear another thing about the raccoon? Talk about gall. You see, the thing about any animal that's going to survive... Now, you're going to find this absolutely unbelievable. I don't care whether you believe it or not. It is a fact. I mean, anybody who has ever dealt with raccoons knows that I'm not kidding. That any animal that's going to win in this race for meekness has to have gall. Now, that seems to be a contradiction to the meekness. Let's put it this way. He has no fear. You don't think for a minute that the cockroach fears you, do you? Oh, no. Oh, no. He's always there. You can yell at him all you want in the kitchen. He comes back. Throw water at him. Say bad words. Swear. He comes back. Well, I am. This is the third day. Now, this is going to be a thing which many of you aren't going to believe, but it actually did happen. I am in the kitchen, right, of this little cabin which I had rented. I had a little kitchen. You know, it was one of these summer cottage type things. It was kind of a wooden kitchen with a sink and stuff like that. And a wooden. It was very, very primitive, but it was, you know, it was a cabin. That's all. It was a lakefront cabin. And I'm in the kitchen now. Now, I don't recall what I was doing. I was by the sink. And I was washing something. When all of a sudden I felt something rubbing against my leg. Well, now, I just thought something was itching me. And I just reached down and scratched. And I felt something. I looked down there. And rubbing against my leg, just like a cat, is this raccoon. Now, so help me. The raccoon had come in, and he's rubbing up against me. Just like a cat. He's rubbing up against you, and he's scratching his leg. I looked down, and at first, I was scared, you know. At a certain point, you know, you expect raccoons to run away. You expect things like possums to run away from you, don't you? So I goes, "Ooh, a raccoon!" And I jump back, and he's very friendly. He's walking around the kitchen. Up in Maine. Well, I watched him. I says, well, I'm going to see. I'm bigger than him. He can't really do any damage to me. I'm going to watch this. By the way, he was pretty big. For those of you who don't know this about a raccoon, he's got hands. He doesn't have paws like ordinary animals. You know that, Skip, don't you? Have you ever seen a raccoon closely? Oh, you got a lot to learn, friend. The raccoon has got hands. Actually hands. Little hands. They look like people hands, only they're little. Yeah, didn't you know that? Well, here he is in my kitchen. So this raccoon is rubbing up against me like a, you know, because he loves the idea that I'm feeding him my worms every day, my fish worms. See, he kind of took to me. So he's rubbing up against me there, you know. I looked at him, I said, you, boy, what an ingrate. You know, the idea of you eating all my worms, and now you're coming in my kitchen, and you expect me to love you or something. So he's rubbing up against me, and I back away to see what he's going to do. Now, listen to what the raccoon did. It's broad daylight. He circles my kitchen. He's walking very cool. Raccoon has a curious, cool way of walking. And he just sort of walks high up on his legs, stretched out like. It's a funny-looking thing. His tail is beautiful, bushy, see? And he's got these big circles around his eyes, which give him a look of continual surprise. A raccoon looks always surprised at life. He doesn't look depressed, unhappy, surprised, but ready to deal with it. So he walks around. See, I'm saying, I'm going to watch this little son of a gun, see what he does. See, walks around real cool. And then he stands up on his hind feet. Now, this raccoon was big. Now, many people think raccoon's a little animal. He's a big animal. He's big. Stands up on his hind feet. Stretches as high as he can, and very carefully opened the cupboard door under the sink. He opened it. He grabbed it with his hand and opened. I couldn't believe what I'm seeing. I said, what's he going to do next? See? Well, then he reaches in under the sink. Now, under the sink, you see, was where all the cleaning stuff, you know, like many times when you keep under the sink, you keep stuff like, you know, soap, chips, and junk like that. He looks in there, see? He's looking now. He's peering in the darkness. They can see very well in the dark, by the way. He's looking in, see? And he slowly starts to move in to see what's in there. He grabs a can of Ajax. You know this kind of cardboard can that looks like Dutch cleanser can and that? He grabs a can of Ajax in two of his hands. He backs out with it now. He's standing on his hind feet with the Ajax. He looks at it, and then he takes the Ajax and dumps it out. Very carefully, he sees it's dribbling out. Now he digs this, see? With that, he runs around the kitchen on his hind feet, dumping out the Ajax all over the floor. He's sprinkling it all over. Well, now he runs out of Ajax. He's got all the Ajax out. What do you think he does next? Puts the can of Ajax down, goes back to the cupboard, and gets out this big box of soap chips. He backs out with it, and now he's got it sort of hooked in his mouth, and with his two hands, he's grabbing it. So he pulls it back out. It's a big 2-pound bag, box, one of these big boxes like Fab or something. He pulls it out like that. He looks at it. He tilts it. And, of course, it goes, shh, it pours out. Did he love that? With that, he walks around the kitchen now, spilling the fab all over the kitchen. Okay, and I'm watching him. See, all the while I'm saying, I can't believe what I'm seeing. See, he's doing this. Right in front of me he's doing it. Well, he's not through. So he goes back under the thing, and he discovers a sponge. Well, he takes the sponge out. He looks at it, just very carefully with his two hands, rips it in two. My new sponge. He then takes the other two halves, rips them in two. Oh, is he strong? Now the sponge is a pile of little tiny pieces. He has ripped it all up. I have Ajax all over the kitchen. I have Fab all over the kitchen. And then he spots the chair. He scurries over, hops up on the chair, goes from the chair on the top of the cupboard, and now he's upstairs. He reaches up, opens up the top cupboard, and man, he's in business. There is a half a box of Wheaties, which he begins to start to pour out. He then reaches up and he takes stuff like salt. He's pouring that down. And by that time, I says, you had enough now. This is enough, you know. Fun is fun, but now you're just pushing a little too far, see. So I give him a swat. I run over there, see. And I've got a towel. I don't hurt him, see. I just picked up a towel, a kitchen towel, see. And I go, get out of here, you rotten. You rotten crummy. Get out of here, you raccoon. And I hit him one, see, with a towel. He grabs the towel. He turns around like a shot. He grabs the towel in his two hands and scurries out the front door with my towel. Well, it was from that time on, we had a kind of a truce, see. Every day I would put out a new box of Wheaties for him out on the porch, which he could spray out all over where he wanted to, you know, eat it or play with or take a bath in it. And I got so that I split my worms with him right down the middle. I kept the worms I was going to use for fishing under my pillow every night when I slept, and I gave him the other half of the can, which he ate. So ever since that time, I've had a sneaking, grudging admiration for raccoons. And anybody who knows anything about raccoons, they got a million raccoon stories. There is the rumor of a raccoon out in Montana who learned to drive a Honda 305. Drove it successfully for a year and a half. And one day was picked up for speeding. The only time he was caught. Then he got into trouble. Of course, he didn't have a driver's license. Understand he was underage, too. But don't believe for a minute we're the meek, friend. There's a lot of creatures that are going to outdo us in the meek league.